This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots to talk about this hour and next, and we invite you to take part by calling us at 877-726-8255. That's 877-726-TALK. And thereby, you can enter the doctor's office, have an appointment with me, discuss your health issues, pose your questions about nutrition and medicine in general. 877-726-TALK is our number. But we got lots to talk about today. We're going to talk a little bit about a study that suggests that too much exercise may be bad for you. We'll also talk about the epic fail of some of the new expensive cancer drugs that are being approved and rolled out. 877-726-TALK is our number, as I said. And before we get to your phone calls, here's a new look at the concept of hypoglycemia. Hypoglycemia, or low blood sugar, was a popular diagnosis way back in the 1960s and 70s. It was the basis for popular books. And it was often scoffed at as a diagnosis by conventional mainstream doctors because, well, a lot of problems were attributed to hypoglycemia. Brain fog and anxiety and depression and cravings. And, you know, when people say the hypoglycemia made me do it, it sounds like they're trying to impugn an outside agency, some sort of outside force for their own personal character flaws that they succumb to sugar temptation. But hypoglycemia, or low blood sugar, is getting a new look, according to a study out of Yale University. Very interesting study, because it suggests that people who are obese or who have type 2 diabetes, probably also people who are on their way to type 2 diabetes with what we call metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, prediabetes, that these people actually have lower levels of brain glucose than normal individuals. Now, this is quite fascinating, and how they demonstrated this was with an experiment. They took a bunch of normal folks, and then they took a bunch of obese and diabetic folks, and they gave them the exact self-same IV of glucose, so they could make sure that it was the same challenge. And then they measured brain levels of glucose. And what they found was quite interesting. They found that in the individuals who were normal, after the infusion, they had higher levels of glucose than the individuals with type 2 diabetes or obesity. So what that suggests is that people who are diabetic or who have overweight, it may take more sugar for their brain to sense satiety. Satiety means there's enough. I've had enough. I can stop eating. I can stop drinking soda. I can stop eating candy. But it appears that also the lean people who had more glucose entry into the brain also felt more full, even though the experiment was conducted after an overnight fast. So the lead researcher on this, a Dr. Janice Huang, she's an MD, explains, quote, glucose is the most primitive signal to the brain that you've eaten. Could it be that obese individuals are not getting sugar into the brain and not sensing it? Thus, the feedback loop to stop eating could also be blunted. So, a really interesting update on the concept of hypoglycemia. People who are on blood sugar roller coasters, they need to eat more and more sugar. The result of eating more sugar is that you trigger more insulin. Insulin causes sugar levels to plummet, and you go up and down and up and down on the blood sugar roller coaster until finally you're overweight and diabetic. And by then it may be too late, because there are actually some changes in the way that your brain absorbs the sugar. And that may explain why it's so hard for some people to turn the ship around and, through better diet, improve their blood sugar. We just did a podcast on the subject of diabetes with Dr. Mona Morstein on her excellent new book, Mastering Your Diabetes. You can check it out at drhoffman.com. But it's all about diet. Most of the diabetes drugs that are out there have major toxicities, and therefore it's a nutritional disease par excellence. Responds beautifully to diet, exercise, nutritional supplements. And that's the best way that we can curb this trend towards a national epidemic of obesity and type 2 diabetes, which threatens to sink our healthcare budget, undermine our national productivity and well-being. All right, you can call us. 877-726-8255 is our number. And let's move on to this story, which has to do with all the new cancer drugs that are being approved. Many of them have MAB on the end, or MIB on the end. And what they are monoclonal antibodies, really expensive drugs, drugs that may cost tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars for a year of use. And they're laser-like in their effect on certain molecular pathways that are thought to be important in the progression or the development of cancer. And they're being approved gradually. It's a new era in cancer treatment, where no longer are we talking about just surgery, radiation, and chemo being toxic poison, which kills cancer cells but also damages normal cells. We're using these new monoclonal antibodies as ways of attacking cancer. But here's an article from the British Medical Journal that suggests that the benefits of these drugs, very expensive, may be dubious. It's entitled Availability of Evidence of Benefits on Overall Survival and Quality of Life of Cancer Drugs Approved by the EMA. That's the European equivalent of the FDA, the European Medicines Agency. It's a study of drug approvals from 2009 to 2013. And they say here that from 2009 to 2013, the EMA approved the use of 48 cancer drugs for 68 different types of cancer. Of these, 12% were approved on the basis of just a single study, which isn't that good evidence of the efficacy of these drugs. Just a single study? At the time of market approval, there was significant prolongation of survival in 28 of the 68 drugs, that's just 35%. Well, okay, prolonged survival, that's good, isn't it? Well, let's look at the magnitude of the benefit on overall survival. How much life did it help patients gain? Well, the magnitude ranged from just 1 to 6 months. And the average was just 2.7 months. That's not much at all. At the time of market approval, there was an improvement in quality of life in just 7 of 68 approvals. That's just 10% showed an improvement in quality of life. In the subsequent post-marketing period, in other words, they looked at, you know, not just the studies prior to the release of the drug, but after the release of the drug, there was evidence for extension of life in just 7%, just 7%, and reported benefit on quality of life in just 11%, That's not good. Of the 68 cancer indications that received EMA approval, just 51% showed a significant improvement in survival or quality of life. But nearly half, 49%, remained uncertain. So these drugs are being approved on limited evidence with minimal impact on either quality of life. And what they say here in this article in the British Medical Journal, this situation has negative implications for patients and public health when expensive drugs that lack clinically meaningful benefits are approved and paid for within publicly funded healthcare systems. By the way, we're talking, right? We're talking NHI, National Health, a national health system in England. When expensive drugs that lack clinically meaningful benefits are approved and paid for within publicly funded healthcare systems, individual patients can be harmed, important societal resources wasted, and the delivery of equitable and affordable care undermined. So, yeah, you know, we're making, I'm hopeful because we seem to be making progress in cancer research, but these results are dismal and suggest that we need to do better. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our number, 877-726-TALK for Intelligent Medicine.
Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman for Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA, and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. They source only the highest quality, deep, cold water fish using traditional, sustainable methods. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and 28 of their fish oils have received the highest 5-star rating from the International Fish Oil Standards Program. Carlson is the number one selling liquid fish oil brand in the United States. Carlson's award-winning omega-3 nutritional supplements are available in soft gels and liquid form for those who have trouble swallowing supplements or who prefer this delivery method. For more information, go to CarlsonLabs.com. CarlsonLabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest-fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. And you can call us 877-726-8255. That's 877-726-TALK. And come directly into the doctor's office, as Arlene in New York is about to. Hi, Arlene. How are you?
Hello. Fine. Thank you, doctor. I wanted to mention first that I've listened to you since your first show.
Oh, my goodness.
I can't find you on WOR anymore or on the other New York stations.
We're on WVNJ, which is out of northern New Jersey, and it's AM 1160.
Thank you.
During the hours of 1 to 2... Yeah, 1 to 2. It's just 1 hour. But the show is 2 hours, and you can listen to the entire show if you log on to the stream, which you can find.
I do.
And that's how you're listening. Okay, great.
That's how I'm listening. But here's my question, doctor. Do you think it's better for someone with an A1C level of 6.5 who is 82 years old, he's quite thin, he's lost 30 pounds, restricting carbohydrates, and he can't get it any lower than that.
Yeah.
Do you
yeah.
think it might be a good idea to go on a diabetic medicine to lower
I actually think it would be, because here's the problem. Type 2 diabetes is as opposed to, you know, type 1 diabetes, which is an autoimmune disease where the cells in your pancreas that make insulin get destroyed. In type 2 diabetes, normally you have too much insulin, and the insulin makes you fat, makes you crave carbohydrates, you get fatter and fatter. And that type of diabetes really responds well to a low-carb diet, weight loss, certain supplements, maybe the drug metformin. I mean, I think that's the only diabetes drug worth its salt. Other medications may fix the numbers, but they don't ultimately lead to better survival or reduction in cardiovascular risk or freedom from side effects, in my opinion. But when you're 85 and you continue to be diabetic, and when a hemoglobin A1C is 6.5, that means you're diabetic. You cross the Rubicon, so to speak. You beyond about 6.2 is definitely diabetic. 5.8 to 6.2 might be pre-diabetic, but this person is actually in the diabetes realm. Let's call it what it is. And when you've lost a lot of weight and you are on a very low-carb diet, you still can't maintain optimal blood sugar, then it's appropriate to go on a diabetes medication. I'd probably start with metformin. There are other medications that are out there that, you know, you might need to consult a diabetes specialist because that's what they do. And ultimately, some of these people actually need insulin because, and this is what you can measure insulin. A doctor can measure whether you're producing adequate insulin, whether you're a candidate for insulin therapy. I mean, it's a shame to put an overweight type 2 diabetic on insulin prematurely when a better diet, some exercise, and some supplements will help. But when somebody can't control their blood sugar and they've lost weight and they're on the most stringent diet, then sometimes insulin makes sense. So, yeah, I mean, and as people age, they lose the vigor of their cells in the islets of Langerhans to produce insulin. It is sometimes just a burnout, pancreatic burnout, where you just don't produce enough. And at that point, you need help because the most stringent diet in the world and all the supplements in the world aren't going to fix the blood sugar, and we may need medication. And you want a light hand with the medication because, you know, certain medications have a lot of side effects. Okay?
Thank you very much, Doctor.
My pleasure. Let me share this with you. If you're suffering from frequent fatigue, here's the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age or illness. It's NT-Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics. It repairs damaged cell membranes, and it works particularly on the mitochondria, which is the energy powerhouse of the cell. Clinical trials have shown that NT-Factor reduces fatigue by almost half and reverses some symptoms of aging. You can get it in the form of ProPax with NT-Factor. It's got all the different ingredients you need to support your supplement program. But you can also get it as a single NT-Factor product. It's called Healthy Aging. It's the perfect accompaniment to whatever supplement regimen you're already taking. With a 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. So order ProPax or Healthy Aging by calling 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
America, we've got your back for immune health this season. It seems that everyone you know has a cold or the flu. Many health professionals agree that probiotics are the number one natural therapy for boosting immune health at this time of the year. Why are probiotics so good? Because 70% of your body's immune cells reside in the GI tract. By taking a superior probiotic daily, like Dr. O'Hara's probiotics, you can enhance your overall immune system. Since its origin over 30 years ago, Dr. O'Hara's probiotics has prided itself on purity in creating this certified vegetarian probiotic supplement, free of gluten, allergens, and GMOs. Natural healthy fruits and vegetables are fermented for 3 years with 12 probiotic strains to create Dr. O'Hara's trademark postbiotic metabolite blend. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference for yourself this cold and flu season. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Amazon.com, as well as Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and natural health retailers everywhere. Get them today.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and you can call us at 877-726-TALK. And apropos that announcement about our website, drhoffman.com, we got a great article that I put out in our newsletter. You would have got it if you subscribed to our newsletter, which I encourage you to do. But if you didn't, go to drhoffman.com and download an article on SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth. We're doing a focus on SIBO this month in anticipation of a SIBO summit where you can learn more about how to address your digestive complaints. But check out our article on SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth. Okay, 877-726-TALK is our number, but there are other ways to get through to us. You can email your question to radioprogram@AOL.com, and that'll give you an opportunity to have your question answered on our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast. But another way to get questions to us, if you go to our website, adairhoffman.com, and a PC or Mac, on the right side, there's a little rectangle that you can click on, and it will prompt you to record a question, as did Michael. Let's hear from Michael.
I'd like to ask you about safflower oil. I know it's a vegetable oil, and I know how you feel about vegetable oils. But nevertheless, the notation on the system shows that safflower oil has a lot of benefits. I wonder if it's possible that safflower oil might be one of the better oils to have as far as a vegetable oil.
Okay. Well, yes. You know, safflower oil is an example of an omega-6 fatty acid. And, you know, while it's not GMO or artificial, it is natural, it does tend to increase your ratio of omega-6 fatty acids to omega-3 fatty acids, which is thought to be one of the causes of inflammatory disorders. Most Americans get too much in the way of omega-6 fatty acids through things like soy oil and cottonseed oil that are ubiquitous in processed foods, salad dressings, and the like. And so I tend to shy away from safflower oil. Also, I believe that safflower oil is kind of a fragile oil when it comes to cooking. I probably wouldn't cook at high temperatures or sort of fry or saute with safflower oil. I might use a little safflower oil to some special dish that you wanted. Maybe you want to avoid the obtrusive flavor of olive oil. You know, most people like the flavor of olive oil. Maybe for some dishes you don't want that. You want a kind of a neutral flavor, and safflower has a neutral flavor. It's not, it's almost, it's kind of a delicate flavor that's, you know, not nutty per se and not bitter. And, you know, I think it may have a place, but I would probably minimize my intake of safflower oil. So thanks for that question. And so let's take a look at this story, which I found the headline fascinating. And sometimes you have to do a little bit of a deep dive to see the story behind the headline. And the headline's interesting, but actually the story behind it is even more interesting. Here's the clickbait. Stress may be just as bad for your body as junk food, study finds. So, you know, and that's an important concept, because a lot of people that are intelligent medicine listeners pay inordinate attention to diet, but almost to the point where maybe they engender stress, but they don't practice meditation, relaxation. They're focusing all their energy on a healthy diet, taking supplements, oodles and oodles of them. But stress may be just as bad for your body as junk food. Okay, that's a truism. But how precisely did this study demonstrate that stress may contribute to poor health just as much as poor diet? Well, it's an interesting story. Researchers at Brigham Young University, in collaboration with their colleagues at Shanghai University in China, conducted an experiment with mice. And they put the mice on a lousy diet, with the equivalent to a human, you know, standard American diet, the SAD diet, which will make mice sick, just as it makes humans sick, will undermine your health. They also subjected them to stress. And what they found was that, in particular, in female mice, stress and a high-fat diet had a similar effect on their digestive systems. What's going on with that? Well, it turns out that when female mice were exposed to stress, their gut microbiota, the microorganisms that are vital to digestive and metabolic health within their intestines, changed to look like the microbiota, the bacteria of the mice that had been eating a lousy diet. So it suggests a couple of ways to mess up your microbiome, the bacteria that inhabit your intestine, which are crucial for health. One is lousy diet, and another pathway is via stress. And this was particularly the case, for some reason, in the female mice, which, it's interesting because studies have shown that twice as many women experience depression as men, and we know that there's a link between the gut and the brain. It's a two-way street. Stress can worsen the composition of your intestinal bacteria, but also the composition of your intestinal bacteria can determine your mental health. So one of the lead researchers on this study from Brigham Young says, quote, "We sometimes think of stress as a purely psychological phenomenon, but it causes distinct physical changes. In this case, the physical changes were in the gut." And so interesting study that number one point, yeah, stress is as important or maybe even more important for certain individuals than what you eat. But it's mediated through what's happening in your gut. So I'll share with you this companion story that speaks to the same issue. Headline, "Ridiculously healthy," in quotes, "elderly." I would hope that I'm ridiculously healthy. I'm not quite elderly, but I just got my Medicare card. "Ridiculously healthy elderly have the same gut microbiome as healthy 30-year-olds. So this is done at the University of Western Ontario in Canada, and one of the largest microbiota studies conducted in humans. Researchers have shown a potential link between healthy aging and a healthy gut. Who was it who said about 2,500 years ago, all health begins in the gut? It was Hippocrates, the Greek physician who was considered the father of medicine. All disease begins in the gut, he said. Well, now researchers have shown a potential link between healthy aging and a healthy gut. Researchers found that the gut microbiota of exceedingly healthy elderly, that's something to aspire to. I'm going to be an exceedingly healthy elderly person in a few years, up to 100 years old in this study, was very similar to the gut microbiota of healthy 30-year-olds. Maybe it's hard to find healthy 30-year-olds anymore because of what they eat. They looked at more than this is another China-Canada collaboration. They looked at more than 1,000 Chinese individuals in a variety of age ranges from 3 to over 100 who were self-selected to be extremely healthy with no known health issues, no family history of disease. The results showed a direct correlation between health and the microbes in the intestines. So, it's a question of, is it the chicken or the egg? Is it freedom from stress, good diet, and exercise that enable you to have a healthy gut? Or is healthy aging predicated by the bacteria in your gut, and then you have the freedom to be well and psychologically balanced because the bacteria in your gut are optimally populated? So the main conclusion they say is if you're ridiculously healthy and 90 years old, your gut microbiota is not that different from a healthy 30-year-old in the same population. This demonstrates that maintaining diversity of your gut, you know, we hear a lot about diversity, diversity, diversity in our culture. What you want to strive for is diversity in your gut, healthy balance of bacteria. You don't want to wipe out the good bacteria by taking multiple antibiotics, toxic artificial ingredients, artificial sweeteners that damage the microbiome. This demonstrates that maintaining diversity of your gut as you age is a biomarker of healthy aging, just like low cholesterol is a biomarker of a healthy circulatory system. Well, it isn't necessarily, but using that analogy. But also this opens up the possibility that resetting the microbiota of the elderly to that of a 30-year-old might help promote health. So yeah, probiotics, yeah, healthy diet, beneficial fibers, prebiotics, freedom from stress, as we mentioned in the other study, that stress damages your microbiome. Diet is, of course, of great primacy in maintaining a healthy microbiome. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We invite your phone calls. Our number is 877-726-8255 for Intelligent Medicine.
Stop breathing right now. No, really, hold your breath. This is how it feels when you're stuffed up due to colds, flu, pollen, dander, post-nasal drip, or any other reason. That's when you need clear saline nasal spray, the only spray with the power of xylitol. That simple saline solution you're using is only doing half the job. It's just rinsing. In multiple research studies, xylitol has been shown to reduce bacterial adhesion and help keep your nose moist and clean much longer than saline alone, making Clear more effective at washing away that nasty gunk in your nose. Clear is so powerful, it's been granted over 11 patents. So step up from that wimpy saline spray to something that actually works faster and better at getting you the relief you need to start breathing now. And if your doctor isn't talking to you about Clear for your congestion, maybe you need to get a new doctor. You don't just rinse your hands, why would you just rinse your nose? Clear saline nasal spray with xylitol. Available at Walmart, CVS, Whole Foods, Rite Aid, and everywhere else. Or clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Now go wash your nose.
Well, back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here, and you can call us at 877-26-8255 this hour or next. And we have a question from Linda. Let's hear from Linda.
My question is in regards to iodine supplements. For example, in a 12.5 milligram iodine supplement, which is comprised of iodine 5 milligram, iodide potassium salt 7.5 milligram versus an iodine supplement comprised of iodine 5 milligram, sodium iodide 5 milligram, potassium iodide 2.5 milligram, which would be considered the better formulation for one to consume?
Okay, well, let's talk iodine. And iodine is an essential nutrient. It's an essential element. The U.S. Government recommends daily intake of iodine at just 150 micrograms. So 150 micrograms is actually 0.15 milligram. And you're talking about, many, many times that amount. When we're talking about 12.5 milligrams, well, that's 1,250 micrograms. That's, over 10 times more than the U.S. recommended daily intake of iodine. And this is a controversial proposition because we need iodine. We need a little more if we're pregnant or nursing. This level of iodine prevents deficiency, which may result in goiters, mental retardation in the baby, and all the other associated problems of iodine deficiency. But there's also the use of iodine for therapeutic purposes at higher doses. And there's a nice book about that by Lynn Farrow. And I think it's called something, The Iodine Crisis or something like that. We interviewed her on a previous edition of Intelligent Medicine. We did a podcast with her. And so iodine at higher doses can be used to treat a variety of problems. It's great for dealing with painful breast nodules. If you're suffering from breast tenderness, it's actually beneficial. It's helpful for fibrocystic breasts, where the breasts are lumpy and sometimes hard, painful. It really helps with that at higher doses. And the doses might be 5 milligrams or 7.5 milligrams or 12.5 or 15 milligrams. But you got to be careful because too much iodine can actually, it's supposed to help the thyroid at moderate doses, but at high doses, it can have an unpredictable effect. It can suppress the thyroid. It can, in some cases, cause the thyroid to go into thyroid storm. It can sort of go into high gear and cause hyperthyroidism. Other things that's helpful for, it's helpful for infections. I mean, you know, when you're a kid, if you're old enough, you remember they put iodine on a skinned knee, hurt like hell, but it was helpful. Iodine has antiseptic effects. So when we give it to people with, say, chronic sinusitis or chronic bronchitis or bronchiectasis, it can be helpful. It's also something that may have anti-cancer properties, especially in breast cancer. And it may help the prostate as well in cases of prostatitis. So a variety of benefits. It also helps the body detox from excess fluoride and excess bromine, which are all too ubiquitous in our environment. They're actually, you know, fluorine's added to water and beverages. We put it on our teeth. And actually, too much fluoride can be toxic, and iodine helps to drive that out. And bromine is something that's in baked goods, and sometimes it's used to disinfect pools. We get too much of the bromine, and that may interfere with our thyroid function, blocking iodine's effect on the thyroid. So when it comes to the mixture, you know, getting a little technical here, what I like is a 50-50 mix of elemental iodine and potassium iodide. There's also sodium iodide, which I guess is okay, but I prefer the potassium iodide, because that way you get, you know, both elemental iodine and organic iodine, which offers you the best prospect to help absorb it. By the way, potassium iodide is what the pills that they distribute around disasters like Chernobyl. It actually goes to the thyroid, prevents radioactive iodine from binding to the thyroid, and it's helpful for radiation protection. And should there be some kind of nuclear disaster, it'd be a pretty good idea to have potassium iodide pills on hand to protect people from the devastation of the radiation. So here's another. Women who get frequent UTIs may reduce risk by drinking plenty of water. Interesting. They did a study. I mean, yeah, they say, you know, you get urinary tract infection, drink. It helps to sort of rinse out your bladder. Women are more likely to get UTIs than men. Because the urethra is shorter, it's easier for bacteria to travel from the rectal area to the nearby real estate, which is the vagina and urethra. And drinking more fluids increases the rate of flushing of bacteria from the bladder, and it also likely reduces the concentration of bacteria that enter the bladder from the vagina. So they did a study. They looked at 140 healthy premenopausal women who had at least 3 UTIs in the last year and who reported low fluid intake, and they got them to drink more. They were told to drink 1.5 liters of water a day. That's about 3 16-ounce glasses. And after a year, women in the control group had 3 UTIs, whereas those in the water group had 1.5 UTIs on average. That's a reduction by half. So the water group averaged fewer regimens of antibiotics as well, a reduction of by about half. But there can be problems with excess water intake. And this, I notice this is sometimes a tick, sort of a habit among young gals. They walk around with a water bottle, and they're constantly slugging on the water bottle, you know, taking a slug of water, in the belief perhaps that they'll detoxify, or it's cleansing, or it'll stave off food craving because they're dieting. Here's a case report. When plenty is too much, water intoxication in a patient with a simple urinary tract infection. Here, a 59-year-old woman, following the advice, with a urinary tract infection. She was admitted to the hospital with water intoxication because when you drink too much water without electrolytes, you deplete your sodium, and low levels of sodium can cause you to feel weak in the legs. You can pass out. You can go into a coma. You can die from brain swelling. It actually has occurred on some occasions to marathon runners who just drink water instead of electrolyte solutions that have some sodium replacement. It could be a problem. So drink, but not too much, to avoid UTIs. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're back with another hour of the weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly, Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
take advantage of everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, just go to drhoffman.com. There you'll find cutting-edge articles and resources vital to your health and wellness. Subscribe to the podcast and newsletter to keep Intelligent Medicine content flowing all week long. Also, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients. Finally, become a patient of my practice. I will personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all of our Intelligent Medicine principles, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our nutritionist. She'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Get the Intelligent Medicine experience. Go to drhoffman.com. drhoffman.com.